From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross.
No more writing, no more rodeos. If you don't stop, your seizures are going to get worse.
That's an intolerable prognosis for the main character in the film The Rider, a rodeo rider and horse trainer who suffers a head injury in a rodeo accident. The Rider is now streaming. Today, our interview with the film's star, Brady Jandrew, who plays a slightly fictionalized version of himself. Jandrew was thrown and stomped by a horse in a rodeo event.
I was trying to get up, and they're like, no, you got to stay down. You got a broken neck. And they started treating me for a broken neck, and I said, no, my head, it's my head.
We'll also hear from the film's director, Chloe Zhao. It's her second film shot on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation with a cast of people from the reservation. And we'll hear Justin Chang's review of the film. I'm David Biancooley, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. Today's guests are the star and the writer-director of an unusual film called The Rider, which can now be watched on different streaming TV sites. Released to theaters this year, it's about a Native American rodeo rider and horse trainer who is recovering from a devastating rodeo accident and might no longer be able to ride again. You won't know the people in the cast. They're not professional actors. They're playing slightly fictionalized versions of themselves. We're going to be joined by the film's star, Brady Jandrew, who was badly injured in a rodeo accident, and the film's writer-director, Chloe Zhao. Zhao is a Chinese-born, U.S.-based filmmaker who shot this film and her 2015 film, Songs My Brothers Taught Me, on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Before we meet them, let's hear what film critic Justin Chang thought of the film.
The Rider is a stunningly lyrical contemporary Western, a hymn to the beauty of endless prairies, majestic sunsets, and strapping young men on horseback. But the filmmaker Chloe Zhao doesn't drown the myth of the American cowboy in Hollywood gloss. She strips it down to its raw, aching essence. She steeps us in the rhythms of life on South Dakota's Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, where young Lakota men wear chaps and Stetsons, and harbor dreams of rodeo stardom. Zhao was directing her first feature, Songs My Brothers Taught Me, when she met Brady Jandrew, a bronco rider of Lakota descent. Jandrew was well on his way to becoming a rodeo legend until April 2016, when a serious riding accident left him with a near-fatal head wound. Shortly afterward, Zhao began filming him and his friends and family, piecing together a story about a cowboy's tough physical and emotional recovery. The result is a seamless, collaborative merging of narrative and documentary storytelling, in which every scene, even when heightened for dramatic effect, has a bone-deep authenticity. As the movie opens, Brady Blackburn, as he's been renamed here, has just discharged himself from the hospital and is peeling off his surgical bandages. He has a steel plate in his head and a long gash running down his scalp. He also has alarming seizures that cause his right hand to tighten up uncontrollably. But he has no intention of listening to his doctors, who have warned him against ever riding again. Later that morning, he's practicing roping a dummy bronco outside his family's trailer home when his dad, Wayne, shows up.
What the hell are you doing here?
You're supposed to be up there in the hospital.
I seen Tanner at the bar. He said you escaped, huh?
Told you to check me out.
Well, the doctor said you're supposed to stay up there.
Give me a hug. Why don't you go inside and sober up?
Sober up? Let me see you rope that. Checking yourself out of the hospital like your Uncle Roddy? What the hell? Can't you rope anymore?
That's Jandrew's real-life father, Tim, and you can hear the conflicting impulses in his gruff delivery. The clumsy, boozy affection, the impulse to scold his son for not listening to orders, but also to mock him for being damaged goods. It helps that the older Jandrew has a movie star's wily charisma, and he's passed that gift on to his son. Brady Jandrew may be playing a fictionalized version of himself, but few professionally trained actors could achieve the heartbreaking gravity that he packs into a single downward glance. No less than his horses, he's an extraordinarily magnetic camera subject. Also playing herself is Lily Jandreau, Brady's younger sister, who lovingly helps steer him through his recovery. She has Asperger's syndrome, and their mutual sense of protectiveness provides some of the film's warmest moments. Then there's Brady's close friend, Lane Scott, a former bull rider who's shown paralyzed and unable to speak, due to a car crash in real life, though the movie doesn't specify, leaving us to assume another riding accident. Either way, Scott remains a spirited optimist, telling Brady in sign language to throw some dirt on his wound and not give up. Zhao doesn't reduce her actors to their disabilities or milk their setbacks for easy emotions. Working with the cinematographer Joshua James Richards, she captures the feel of everyday life in this community with an almost unbearable poignancy. She turns a simple drama of personal struggle into a wounding portrait of masculinity in crisis. Brady tries to move on, getting a job at a supermarket and at one point almost pawning his saddle. But when we see him leading a horse around its enclosure, riding it, talking to it, and praying over it, we see a man doing what he was clearly born to do. How do you carry on when the only dream you've ever known has been ripped away? Zhao captures the exhilarating sense of liberation that rodeo riders must feel, even if only for 8 seconds at a time. But she also conveys how few other options there are for a community whose traditions have been codified into ritual. At times, she makes these wide-open plains feel downright claustrophobic. The Rider may be a movie about someone literally trying to get back on that horse, but there's also a subtler metaphor at work. Throughout the movie, we see Brady repeatedly using his good hand to assist his injured one, prying open his clenched grip. It's a fitting, heartbreaking image for the pain and necessity of letting go.
Justin Chang is a film critic for the LA Times. Earlier this year, Terry Gross spoke with the star of The Rider, Brady Jandreau, who is a Lakota Indian from the Pine Ridge Reservation, where The Rider was filmed. She also spoke to the movie's writer-director, Chloe Zhao.
Brady Jandreau, Chloe Zhao, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on this beautiful movie. Brady, I want to ask first, how are you now? Have you fully recovered from your head injury? Are there lasting effects you're still dealing with?
I struggle with a little bit of short-term memory stuff. But other than that, I pretty well recovered.
And so you're riding?
Not in rodeos, but I'm training wild horses again. I was a month and a half after my head injury.
Wow. What actually happened to you?
I was participating at the PRCA rodeo in Fargo, North Dakota. And I was riding in the saddle bronc riding. And I was nearing the whistle and trying to stay on for the 8 seconds to get a score. And I come off the side and my foot hung in the stirrup and caused me to swing underneath the horse. And the horse stepped on my head while it was bucking and pulled me out of the stirrup and it crushed my skull. It was a comminuted fracture, meaning shattered, and it was 3 1/4 inches in length. 3/4 of an inch wide, and about 1 1/4 inches deep into my brain cavity.
Oh my God.
Caused a significant amount of bleeding. I actually didn't lose consciousness until I went into a seizure at the hospital, which was only like 11 minutes away.
So now you have a steel plate in your head?
I don't think it's made out of steel because it doesn't beep when I go through the monitors. I believe it's actually like titanium or something.
I see. You mentioned the whistle. I don't think most of our listeners would be familiar with the 8 seconds. Can you explain the 8 seconds and the whistle?
Well, when participating in the rough stock events of rodeo, either bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, or bull riding, you were required to stay mounted on the animal with your free hand in the air for 8 seconds from the time the horse's or bull's head breaks the plane of the chute once the door is opened, the gate, and there's a whistle blown at the 8 second mark to notify the rider that he has made a qualified ride and is free to dismount the animal.
And then riders come up and you can mount one of their horses to get off the bucking bronco.
In the bareback riding and saddle bronc riding, yes, they're called the pickup men. They are in the arena to make sure that nothing goes wrong. In the bull riding, there are 2 or 3 bullfighters in the arena. And they get the bull's attention so that when the rider dismounts, the bull won't be right on top of them when they hit the ground.
Do you have memories of the actual accident?
I remember the horse bucking away from me. I remember the bullfighter coming up to me who was helping and telling me to stay down. They're bringing a stretcher and all that. And I was trying to get up, and they're like, no, you got to stay down. You got a broken neck. And they started treating me for a broken neck. And I said, no, my head. It's my head. I can feel my feet. Look, I can move them. They're like, don't move your legs. Don't move your legs. I was like, I can move them. It's my head. And they started to kind of look at the wound on my head. I had very long hair at the time. And the step actually didn't puncture my skin very much. It was like a small cut. And the bleeding, about 90% of the bleeding, if not more, was going on inside of my brain cavity. Mm. And because of the small puncture, not very much of it was able to come out. My wound was listed as contaminated because it had horse manure and sand and hair and other things in there. And I was conscious, cleared to the hospital. And when I got there, they started asking me questions. And I went into a full body convulsion seizure, and they induced coma and did surgery.
Wow. Now, you know, in the movie, your character, who's kind of you, I mean, you're playing a version of yourself, watches getting thrown and stomped on a video that was made of the event. Is that the actual video of what happened to you?
That is 100% the actual video.
What was it like for you to watch it?
I've watched that, you know, dozens of times. To be honest, that phone is broken now, so the only time I can watch it is when I watch the movie, but I don't have much of a problem with that.
With watching it?
Honestly, I kind of like to think of it as it didn't really happen to me. It happened to Brady Blackburn.
Oh, to your character in the movie, yeah.
Yeah. But.
Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. If you're just joining us, my guests are Brady Jandrew, who plays a slightly fictionalized version of himself in the new film The Rider, and Chloe Zhao, the film's director. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Since 1971, dedicated to fighting hate and bigotry in all of its forms and seeking justice for the most vulnerable members of society. Learn more at splcenter.org.
This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, I have two guests. Brady Jandrew plays a fictionalized version of himself in the new film, The Rider. He was a rodeo rider and horse trainer who 2 years ago was in a rodeo riding accident that resulted in a brain injury and a plate having to be placed in his smashed skull. It meant having to rethink his life, which was based around riding and training horses, which is exactly what his doctors told him he should no longer do, at least not for a while. My other guest is Chloe Zhao, who directed the film and conceived of the film. It's the second film she made on the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation in South Dakota. Now, I mean, your doctors told you couldn't ride again and that you certainly couldn't do rodeo again. I know someone with a relatively minor concussion who had trouble riding the train afterwards because it was such a dizzying experience because of the concussion. Real concussions are so much worse than they're always made to seem in movies, like where the detective gets whacked on the head with a pistol, he's knocked unconscious, he wakes up with a headache, and that's the last we hear about the concussion. You know, yeah. It's not that way in real life. But it sounds like you started riding like long before your doctor said that you should do it. What did the doctors tell you? How soon did you start riding? And did you do it sooner than they said you should, like I think you did?
Okay, so on April Fool's Day of 2016 was the day I was injured. And like I said, I went in there, and then they did surgery, and they induced coma. It was over a five-day span, because I woke up officially on the 5th. But on the 4th, I woke up and under the induction of coma and pulled the respirator out of my chest and started to pull my IVs out, and they did a breathing test to see if I could breathe on my own. And I failed the first two tests, and then I passed the third one, and then they figured, okay, it's time to drop the induction, see if you can wake up. You know, they had a pretty good idea I could, because I was waking up under the induction, so They dropped it, and I woke up. I couldn't talk right at first. I had very blurry vision in my left eye, and I couldn't. It sounded like my left ear was filled with water. I'm not sure if that was blood in my ear or what, but after that, they told me that I need to stay there. I have to stay in the hospital. And I told them that I'm not going to. I'm not going to lay here and rot. And they said, okay, well, we can't legally hold you if you can take your medication orally, go to the bathroom on your own, perform daily tasks such as walking, dressing yourself, other things like that. Take medication in pill form. And I walked the line like I was 17, walking for the cops, you know, after I had too much to drink. And I told them my eye was good, and I told them that everything felt great, and they needed to let me out of there. And I took the pills, and then they walked out of the room, and I threw them up in the trash can, and I was out of there. So got down the road a little ways, had a pinch of Copenhagen, ate a chuck wagon. I've been pretty well good ever since. But I never returned to the hospital at all. And then I couldn't take it any longer. 2 weeks after I got home, I rode Gus again, which is a very well-trained horse that was like a brother to me growing up. I mean, if you can imagine an animal being like a brother to someone. So I had a lot of trust in him, you know. I knew I was pretty well safe. And a month and a half after the injury, I actually went flat broke. And unlike in the movie where I work at a grocery store, I went back to doing the only thing I know how to do and what I love to do, which is training wild horses for the public.
But the thing is, like, you're supposed to, after a head injury like that, you're supposed to, I think, prevent your brain from getting jostled. Yeah, so but the point is, you've been ignoring what the doctors say, and if not advice I'd give other people, but I'm really glad that you're okay. Was giving up rodeo hard? Because that you never went back to. Like, that was too risky even for you to think of doing.
Well,
again.
To be completely frank with you, ma'am, I'd say training horses.
Oh, it's more dangerous?
Is more dangerous because it's so unpredictable. Mm-hmm. The only thing that you can predict their actions through is your connection with the animal. And like, say, I mean, even if the horse stumbled and fell down, like my dad a few months ago broke his leg when a horse slipped and fell down on him. Mm. If like a horse were to fall down and I were to hit my head off of a rock or a post or anything, you know, typically I'm about 55, 60 miles from any reputable hospital when I'm training horses, and a lot of times it's just me out there. So.
Okay, you haven't reassured me, but it was a very interesting answer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that training horses is probably more dangerous.
The scenes in the movie where you're training horses are so just beautiful to watch. And, like, are we seeing you train horses for real in those scenes?
Yes.
Wow, it's just beautiful. And, you know, one of the things interesting to me is that the first thing you do in those scenes when you're training a new horse is put out your hand for the horse to sniff. And that's something that a lot of us do when we're meeting a new cat or a new dog. And it's interesting that that's the first thing you would do with a horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a horse, you know, they can't say, hi, how are you? I'm so-and-so, you know. So they communicate through typically smelling or, you know, just body language. And when a horse approaches another horse, the first thing they do is they smell noses. If I were to put my face up close to a horse, he'd probably be a little bit intimidated. So, like, a horse's neck is long, like an extension, just like my arm. So I'd put my hand up to their face and let them smell it, just like I'm another horse approaching them to, you know, and smell their nose as well.
Huh. And then other things that you do, you get closer to them, you mm-hmm. kind of pet them, and slowly you put a little bit of your weight on the horse without fully mounting it. Can you talk a little bit, can you describe for us, for those of us who have never seen a horse broken, just a few of the steps that you take to do it and what it's like for you to be experiencing this growing relationship between you and the horse?
It's all through the connection. And the only way that they know how to communicate is through body language, you know, things like that. And I can't just whinny to them and they come running, you know. So like in a horse, typically If they show their rear to you, it's because they feel threatened by you, they want to escape from you, and they might even kick you. Because they, like I said, they feel threatened, they're going to protect themselves. And when a horse offers their face to you, they're interested in what you are, what you're doing, they're paying attention. And typically, like when I would let a horse smell my hand, then the first thing I would do is like pet them on the nose. And then I would like, I wouldn't just reach back and grab them on the leg after that, or else they'd kick my head off. But if I slowly pet and slowly work my way back, but as soon as, you know, say I'm getting by a horse's shoulder and he gets nervous, I have to go back to the nose and restart. Mm-hmm. But typically, back to the shoulder will be easy. And then from that point on, you got to keep that connection and slowly work your way back. Eventually, horses will let me touch their hind legs, their tail, and slide off their butt and crawl underneath their belly and do whatever because they trust me. But it takes some time. I wouldn't say some time. You have to do the proper things to communicate with them for them to allow you to do everything. Because there's no way you could force a 1,000-pound, 1,500-pound, maybe even more, animal to do what you want to do. You have to make what you want look appealing to them. You guys have to make an agreement on the matter.
Brady Jandrew is the Lakota Indian star of The Rider. The film's writer-director is Chloe Zhao. The movie is now available on different streaming sites. We'll continue Terry's interview with them after a break. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Newsy, the TV news channel with honest, in-depth context on the stories that matter. Newsy is for people who aren't satisfied with getting only the loudest part of the story. Newsy delivers more context, more solutions, and greater understanding of the people and events that shape our world. Learn more at newsy.com/watch.
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobbito Garcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're talking with one of the coolest cats around, Lenny Kravitz.
I remember this kid walked up to us in the hallway and he goes, "Your dad's white," and he pointed his finger like that.
Subscribe now.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross, back with more of Terry's interview from earlier this year with Brady Jandrew, star of the film The Rider, and Chloe Zhao, who wrote and directed the film. It's now available on different TV streaming sites. Jandrew plays a fictionalized version of himself in the film. He was a rodeo rider and horse trainer who, 2 years ago, was in a rodeo riding accident that resulted in a brain injury that meant having to rethink his life and career.
You know, we use the expression to break a horse. That sounds kind of violent, like you're, that's not what you're kind of taming a horse,
okay,
creating a relationship with a horse. But what is that, do you like using that word? And
no, I don't. You know, I mean, honestly, like I grew up and that's what people, around horses, they usually say.
Mm-hmm.
They call it breaking them. And there are many, many trainers who still break horses, meaning like almost break their spirit to the point and subdue them and submit them.
Right, break,
cause them to
break
submit
their
to
will,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like by tying them certain ways or working them so hard to where they're so tired they cannot, they can't resist.
Mm-hmm.
What I choose to do is just, like, I'm hanging out with them. And it's just training them through the connection. Breaking is not the right word for it, but it's just the terminology that I'm used to.
Do you think there's something in it for the horse when the horse develops a relationship with a human and learns to accept that the human's going to ride them and also feed them and care for them? Like, I know what's in it for the people. What's in it for the horse?
Well, when a horse connects with you, there is something in it for them, because, like, for their health. And I believe also in a relationship with a person. Like, many horses we save off of kill trucks. They take horses. Well, there's no legal slaughter of horses in the United States now. But there's still legal slaughter of horses in Canada. So, like, typically when a horse, there's like a horse that has never been trained and he's much too wild or much too old for your average trainer to have a go at him, they'll typically sell him and nobody can ride the horse. So he typically goes and becomes glue or dog food or whatever, sent to France or, the horse Apollo in the movie was one of the horses that I actually saved off of the kill truck.
Oh, you're kidding. This is one of the horses you tame in the movie. A beautiful horse.
Apollo, he actually had passed away by the time the shoot began. He was probably 8 or 9 years old, and he was really wild and really big. You know, most people wouldn't have messed with him, but I seen something in Apollo that you don't see in every horse.
It's beautiful buckskin.
Yeah, even though he was he's big yellow. Mm. And even though he was wild, I felt as though he had a lot to offer. He had a very, very, I could see, like, when I look into a horse's eyes, they say more to me than you have said to me in this entire conversation.
Thank you.
No offense. Well,
no offense to you, but that's...
It's help Brady relay. He relays the horses more than people.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And Apollo, he would have had to go to a kill truck, but I knew there was good in him. And so I broke him. He was difficult to break. And for the first, about 2 months we owned him, nobody else could ride him but me. But once he was finished out, he was probably one of the best horses I ever rode.
What happens
if, like, say he were to get, he got into the wire, just like in the movie.
And the barbed wire. Movie,
yeah, that was a recreation. That was a fictional, that was makeup on the horse in the movie. But Apollo's injury was much, much worse than the horse in the movie. It was much higher in the thick part, the gaskin of the horse's leg, and it had sawed completely to the bone before he came in the next day. And I had rode him the day before that. It's not like he'd been out getting neglected or anything. He went out and he probably walked by a patch of bushes and a coyote was sleeping there, and he probably jumped out and he probably took off running, nervous, and got into the wire in a bad way. And like I said, it caught him in like a loop, and from him trying to free himself over those few hours, it had actually sawed the barbed wire into his, down to his femur, basically.
Uh-huh. Did you have to put him down?
No, my dad did it, like in the movie.
Yeah.
But, I loved Apollo. I really hope to get to see him again up in the sky someday.
That must be so hard. I mean, like with a cat or a dog, at least, where I live, you take the animal to the vet and the vet puts the animal down. But with horses, it's often, like the human who shoots the horse, it's an instantaneous death, I guess. But that must so difficult to be part of.
If you've ever seen like a cow or a horse die of natural causes, it's probably the most sickening thing you could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Die on their own from natural causes. Literally, when a horse become or a cow gets down, meaning they are to the point where they cannot get up under their own will, they will keep attempting to get up. And when their legs aren't working for them, they will use their head. And they will literally hit their head off of the ground until they die. So that is probably the least humane thing to do, is to just let them die on their own.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to load Apollo on the trailer, I mean, could you imagine walking up a flight of stairs with one leg? That's about what it would have been like. He would have had to stand in that moving trailer all the way to the vet for an hour and 10 minutes or so. And where he would have had to be unloaded, put in a separate pen, wait until the vet was ready, because obviously there was no way to predict this injury. And there he would be euthanized, which is not instantaneous.
See, I didn't know all this, so I wasn't able to think that through. And it seems much more humane to just put him down yourself and spare the horse.
There was only one thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. So, Chloe, what you do in your films, at least in the first two films that you've made, is cast people to play slightly fictionalized versions of themselves. It's not just Brady, who plays a fictionalized version of himself. His father is in the film playing his father. His sister is in the film playing his sister. His friends are in the film playing his friends. Let's start with his family. Did you have to work hard to convince them to be a part of the film? And I'll mention that his father isn't always painted in the most flattering light in this. His father has gambled away the rent money. So, like, the family is totally broke in the movie. I don't know if it happened that way in real life, but, people will confuse real life with the fictionalized version. So how is his father with playing this role?
Well, this is why Tim Jandrew is his dad's name, and his character's name is completely changed, not just the last name. It's Wayne Blackburn, because Tim in real life, I think is a better father than I portrayed him in the film, you know, but I think, you know, this is a fiction film. And I this is how I explain to everyone who's involved. You're free to keep your real name if you want to, and you can be as comfortable to be yourself as possible. But you are playing fictionalized characters, so you know Tim would probably feel comfortable with me saying that he's made some mistakes as a parent, like all parents do. But it's not like that in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad, I mean, we've had our ups and downs, you know, just like any father and son probably has. But, you know, we get along really good, honestly. You know, I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but, I mean, that's what I mean. You know, everybody, you know, yeah. So, I don't know. My dad is, for lack of a better term, not as much of an asshole as he is in the film.
He's old school. He's old school. Yeah.
Chloe, how did you first get the idea of combining real people and real people's lives in a fictionalized version?
You either work with limitation or you let it work you, you know. We, as a woman, Chinese women filmmaker with not much connections, and to come to America and say, like, I want to make films on a reservation with kids there, back in 2010 to 2013, it was a tough time for the country financially, and for the industry, for everybody. No one was gonna just throw me money to do it. So, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, because that style come out of for us be friend with the limitations that we have, including the way we shoot, the time of the day we shoot, you know, who we cast and all that stuff, and how we run the set.
Well, let me reintroduce you both. If you're just joining us, my guests are Brady Jandrew, who plays a slightly fictionalized version of himself in the new film The Rider, and Chloe Zhao, the film's director, who also conceived the movie. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, one of your new hosts for On Point. We take on the news with the smartest guests and live calls from every corner of the country. NPR's David Folkenflik hosts the Friday Week in the News. Join David and me for On Point.
So, Brady, what is your life like now? I know you're still working with horses. Like, what exactly are you doing?
Actually, since the shoot, I've started a breeding program called the Jandrew Performance Horses. We raise American Quarter Horses, all registered through the AQHA, and we train them to do everything from rodeo events to... not the bucking events, of course, the other events, such as the timed events, where you ride a very well-trained horse to perform a task. And I also train them to do, like, mounted shooting, hunting horses, just pleasure riding horses, about anything that you could name, we could train, so.
And where do you get your horses from now?
Well, I raise them, and I also take in horses.
Oh, so it's a breeding, right, it's a breeding program.
Yep, and I also take in horses from the public to be trained for mm-hmm. a set number of days mm-hmm. For a specific amount of pay.
How many horses do you have now?
We have around 20 registered brood mares, so that means about 20 babies born each year. You cannot break a horse until they're about 2 years old. You can halter break them, meaning teach them how to lead and stuff, if you choose to, but... you can't really break them until they're two, because they aren't developed enough, you know. I mean, it'd be like a 5-year-old playing football or something, you know.
So, you know, to sum up, like, your life was profoundly changed by your head injury from the rodeo. And it looked like maybe you'd have to change your identity altogether, that you'd have to give up riding, that you'd have to give up rodeo. And you've taken, like, a curve. But, you know, because you're no longer doing rodeo, but you're still riding, you're raising horses. Horses are still central to your life. And I guess you must be so grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you feel close to God, you know, just to be in their presence.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think you'd really have to give it up?
You know, there was a point when I definitely had to think about whether or not I was going to. You know, there was a lot of thoughts that went through my head after my injury. You know, I mean, a lot of different emotions, and you know, some of which were very nearly impossible to control. But yeah, like I said, it was something that I thought about, and I rode, like I said, I rode Gus again just 2 weeks after my head injury, just to make sure that my balance was okay, that I was able to mount them, and then it started eating at me to the point to where I knew what I had to do, and I knew what I was going to do, and the rest was up to faith and my connection with the animal.
Brady, what was your first horse, the first time you had, like, a close relationship with a horse?
The very first time that I ever could control a horse on my own. Like my daughter, she's already ridden 22 horses, you know, us holding her up there.
How old
she's only
she?
9 months old.
Oh, God.
She will be 9 months old in 2 weeks, and she's ridden 22 different horses, ridden about 45 times. And, you know, I grew up the same way, but I could actually control a horse. He was a very well-trained horse. His name was Partner, and he was a full-size horse. He was probably about 18 years old, which is pretty old. Usually they've calmed down quite a bit by then, and he would actually, like, I would ride him bareback because there was no saddle that would fit me because I was only a year and a half of age.
Wow, you were riding bareback at a year and a half?
Yeah, because there was no, you know. And if my dad said if I would start to go a little bit off, you know, this is without any lead rope, nobody on there with me. Like, this is literally me riding alone with nothing on a horse with nothing but a bridle and reins. And my dad said I would start kind of falling off to one side, and that horse would go right back underneath me, and I'd start falling off the other. He'd go back underneath me the other way.
To keep you on.
Mm-hmm, to keep me on his back.
And here's a question for you, Chloe. You capture, like, the beauty of the landscape in South Dakota, and the outdoors is so just, it's so open. But the indoors are so cramped. You know, like, the family lives in basically like a trailer. Were you looking for that contrast between the indoors and the outdoors?
Yeah, I am. And if you go to the reservation, I think you will find a lot of that. And again, you know, it's that thing that happened historically when you discontinue people's culture and their connection with the land, even though this beauty happening right, you know, in their backyard, and not everybody can see it. And this is why I really want to tell Brady's story, because he sees it and he works with it and he make it part of who he is. And that's some healing that these young people could start doing, you know, for their people. So it's so important for me to, and for my whole team, to be able to capture the reservation, the South Dakota, the Badlands, in a way that you understand why he chose that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And he's not even given the opportunity moving to a big city.
Chloe, did Brady teach you how to ride?
Yes. Yes, he did. And I had some really great lessons, and then made me really cool when I go back to my friends. And then there are times where I, you know, it's one thing looking at a horse in a movie or in a picture, or have a teddy bear growing up, but when I'm sitting on the horse, you know, and looking down at his ears, it's a powerful animal. You know, it really is. It's a powerful animal, and the only way that they're gonna let you on their back is this mutual understanding and respect. And Brady always tell me, "Don't be scared, Chloe. They can smell your fear." And I was like, yeah, I can smell my fear, too. Because you feel it, you know, between your legs. It's so powerful. And, gosh, and it just, again, you feel so close to nature through these animals. And if I have kids, and when I have kids, I really want them to be around horses and animals.
I want to thank you both so much, and I want to congratulate you on the wonderful film. Thank you.
Well,
thank you so much. Thank you.
Horse trainer Brady Jandrew and writer-director Chloe Zhao speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. Their film, The Rider, is now available on several streaming sites. Coming up, my very favorite television experience of the year, This is Fresh Air.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Kumon. Kumon ensures kids get the best possible foundation in math and reading, along with essential skills for success. In Kumon, kids as young as 3 advance through concepts incrementally, working daily, getting preschoolers kindergarten ready, and challenging older kids. You'll see your kids develop valuable traits like self-confidence and perseverance. Kumon, where smart kids get smarter. Visit Kumon.com.
This is Fresh Air. Next week, we'll be featuring interviews with some of the actors, writers, and producers who have been nominated for Emmy Awards this year, including comedy host John Oliver from HBO's Last Week Tonight, supporting actor Brian Tyree Henry, who plays Paperboy on FX's Atlanta, and writer-producer Scott Frank, creator of the Netflix Western series Godless. Today, we'll end the show with my recent review of a TV segment by another of this year's Emmy nominees, James Corden, host of The Late Late Show on CBS. This segment, in which Corden did a carpool karaoke visit with Paul McCartney, was presented again in primetime this week as an expanded CBS special. Before it first aired, Corden tweeted that it was, quote, quite possibly the best carpool karaoke we've done so far, unquote. As far as I'm concerned, there's no possibly about it. It is the best. And in 1 month, it's attracted more than 30 million views on YouTube alone. Here's what I said when the segment first aired. By now, James Corden has set a very high standard with his carpool karaoke TV pieces. Only a million or two viewers watch his late-night CBS show when it's broadcast, but YouTube and other social media sites extend Corden's reach phenomenally. When he was in London 2 years ago, he took Adele on a karaoke car ride, and their spontaneous sing-along and conversation has been viewed on YouTube, as of this week, almost 182 million times. Few things on TV or the internet can generate as much pure joy as a solid carpool karaoke segment. But even by those standards, the new one showcasing Sir Paul McCartney stands above all others. In only a few days, it's been viewed on YouTube more than 14 million times, and with very good reason. Not only does it have all the happiness and goofiness you expect Corden to deliver, but this McCartney karaoke is unexpectedly tender, touching, and meaningful as well. Most carpool karaoke segments stay in the car and on the road. But Corden takes McCartney to his hometown of Liverpool and a trip down memory lane. Or in this case, down Penny Lane. And while Corden drives down that famous street, McCartney's Beatles song of the same name plays on the car stereo, and the two men happily sing along. McCartney enjoys himself so much that he plays tour guide during the song's instrumental breaks, and ends his patter with the expert timing of a veteran DJ, stopping just before the lyrics resume.
I used to be in the choir at that church.
In that church there?
St. Barnabas, yeah.
You were in the choir?
I was a choir boy.
Thank God for that choir.
Yes,
the man. Voice it's given us.
Yes, indeed. And my brother got married in that church.
No way.
Legendary. Yes, he is. He says hi, by the way.
Penny Lane is in my ears and in my eyes. That's
where the mood switches when Corden asks McCartney about the inspirational positivity of so many of his songs. McCartney tells the story of being visited in a dream by his late mother, who advised him that things would be all right and to let it be. McCartney wrote the song Let It Be as a result, and as he and Corden finished singing along to it in the car, Corden was wiping away tears.
There will be an answer, let it be.
It got me emotional there, Paul.
It did.
I didn't feel it coming. It's too much for me. I couldn't feel. I didn't see that one coming around the corner.
No. That's great, man. You'll tell you that the power of music. It's weird, isn't it? How that can do that to you.
Well, I can remember my granddad, who's a musician, and my dad sitting me down and saying, we're going to play you the best song you've ever heard. And I remember them playing me that.
Really?
If my granddad was here right now, he'd get an absolute kick out of this.
He is.
In the car, McCartney also sings a few verses from the first song he ever wrote, then teams with Corden for an energetic duet of Come On to Me, a new song from McCartney's forthcoming album, Egypt Station. And of course, since they were driving in Liverpool, they also sang along to Drive My Car, with Corden providing perfectly timed car horn blasts. All that would have been enough for a carpool karaoke segment, but this nearly 24-minute piece was just getting started. Using Penny Lane as a jumping-off point, Corden took McCartney to old places from his childhood, a barbershop, a florist, even his childhood home, which is now a tourist attraction run by the National Trust. McCartney stepped inside for the first time since he moved away and gave Corden and us a time travel visit inside his home, including his memories of the bathroom where he sat and strummed guitar and sang as a kid because of the echo from the bathroom tiles.
There's the bog, which was the acoustic chamber.
The acoustic chamber?
Everything sounds better in the bog.
Absolutely.
And finally, McCartney and Corden descend on a local Liverpool pub for a surprise appearance. On cue, and the cue was the opening chord of A Hard Day's Night, the curtain opens and McCartney and his band stun the unsuspecting pub patrons with a five-song set. It was like the Beatles on the rooftop in Let It Be, an unexpected, unbilled, amazing moment of musical history. Then McCartney invited Corden to join them for the final number, which he did. On Hey Jude.
Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You have learned to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you'll begin to make you
The Paul McCartney carpool karaoke ranks right now as my favorite TV moment of the year. And on behalf of Corden, McCartney, and the band, with a nod to that famous rooftop concert, I'd like to say they all passed the audition. 54 years after appearing on The Ed Sullivan Show, Paul McCartney is still making exciting, unforgettable television.
Here we go.
Say now, I saw you flash a smile.
On Monday's show, we begin a week of Emmy-nominated guests, starting with John Oliver, host of HBO's Last Week Tonight, who tells us about taking a close and comic look at a subject, like NRA TV. Also, Brian Tyree Henry, who plays the rapper Paperboy on the FX series Atlanta, on the impact of music in his life, from marching bands to his parents' vinyl collection. Hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Our associate producer for digital media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Sherrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Biancooley.
If you come on to me, then I'll come on to you.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will.